Well, good morning. I've always felt that it's the quality, not the quantity of folks in the audience that counts, so I feel very blessed. Thank you. We have no relationships to disclose. When I say we, I mean a team of colleagues at different universities, Marilyn Winkleby at Stanford, Maria Fernandez in Texas, Renee Salazar at UCSF, and Susan Stewart is our biostatistician at the Cancer Center at UCSF as well. So we all know that these are the healthy 2010 goals, 50% FOBT within the last 2 years and ever have had a sigmoidoscopy. You probably also know that beginning in about 1990, we saw a decreasing trend in cancer incidence and mortality. And we attribute some of that to screening. When you look at the screening data over time, you find that the biggest gains in screening were achieved among the API population. Very nice comparable screening levels for African Americans and whites, but Latinos are lagging. You know, they're below at around 3%, so there's definitely a disparity there. And then when you look at mortality, that's even more striking. The decline in mortality rates are quite significant relative to the white population for African Americans and APIs. Latinos are really lagging, so we have a problem, a serious problem here. So we set out to try to find a way to increase screening. You know, you find in the literature a whole bunch of reasons why people don't get screened. We wanted to find a way to improve screening rates. We wanted to make sure, of course, we're dealing with Latino populations, so we wanted to make sure that they were linguistically and culturally appropriate. But we also wanted to explore the use of technology. So we opted to go with a touchscreen technology. We've done previous work in cervical and breast cancer in this area using that delivery platform. It worked well. We thought we might see how well it works here. Why the kiosk? Well, the kiosk is not a good substitute for a face-to-face relationship for a health educator, a health provider, but it's not bad. You can have an individualized experience. It's self-paced. You can use multimedia, which we do, and I'll show you some examples, so you can engage the learner. And unlike linear media like DVDs or videos or whatever that just kind of fly by from beginning to end, interactive media allows you to tailor and, you know, kind of branch and do all kinds of, you know, pretty interesting things that help you develop more patient-centered information. And because you're using a touchscreen kiosk, we don't have to worry about keyboard literacy, computer literacy, or fooling around with mice. So this is sort of what we ended up doing. You know, there's a welcome screen that shows individuals, just an ordinary folk. But the individual can choose a language. They can indicate their age group, and I'll talk about that in a second, and of course their gender. Now, in our formative research, we did focus groups, key-informed interviews, and we did some ethnographic observation, and we found that there's a, you know, not a donut hole, but there's a gap. Folks that fall below Medicare age. If you're low income, you don't quite have the means to get screened, so it's a problem. They may want to, they may need to, but they can't generally do it. So this is the content. It's pretty standard stuff. We in our focus groups, we try to find out what the gaps are. What do people know? What don't they know? What kind of concerns do they have? How are they anchored? Where do they come from? Let me just point out a couple of things. The module number 6, barriers to screening, and module number 2 are connected. Folks had some misconceptions. The biggest misconception that we learned of, was the perception that if you don't have any family that has had colon cancer, and if you personally haven't had any problems with your stomach, is what the way it's usually voiced, you're okay. You're not at risk. Thank you. Um, So we point out in this intervention that indeed upwards of 80% of the folks that get colon cancer have no family risk factors. So bam, wake up. And we do it nicely and so forth. The other barrier is the one in Module 7. We find that men and women have sort of different reasons for not getting screened and different motivations for getting screened. So we try to work with those. We do a lot of behavioral modeling where we show other individuals kind of with a comparable problem, comparable situation, and kind of depict, essentially provide behavioral prompts on how you can go from here to there. So that's the thinking behind the kiosks. That's what it looks like. I just show this one to indicate that we use animation, motion graphics. We have gender-specific content, and we also can print information. So we're trying to use all of the features, all the capabilities of the technology to deliver an effective patient-centered intervention. Here's one of them.
It's part of the digestive tract, where our bodies break down food, absorb nutrients and water, and store waste products from the digestive process. It is an area of the large intestine that includes the colon and the rectum. Waste from the digestive process moves from the colon to the rectum and passes out of the body. Colorectal cancer is a disease in which the normal cells in the inner lining of the colon or rectum fail to reproduce normally. They produce abnormal growths called polyps, which develop into cancerous tumors that interfere with the normal function of the body and may spread to other parts of the body. Colorectal cancer develops slowly over time. Sometimes it takes 10 to 20 years for polyps to become cancerous. In the early stages, colon cancer often does not have any symptoms or pain. By the time symptoms show up, it may mean that it has advanced and may have spread. Regular screening is the best way to catch colon cancer at an early stage, before it develops and spreads. Colorectal cancer refers to the cancer of the colon and rectum, but it is commonly called colon cancer. It is the third most common cancer diagnosed in men and women, and second leading cause of cancer death in this nation. Yet one of every three colon cancer deaths could have been prevented with regular screening. That is why regular screening is so important. Screening tests can find polyps in their early stages and remove them before they become cancerous. That is why colon cancer is preventable. That's why screening, early detection, and treatment are so important. Screening can prevent cancer and can save lives.
Okay, so in about 1 minute and 12 seconds, you can put a lot of information, draw pictures, give them a good overview, and that's what we do.
I know you should get checked for colon cancer after you reach 50, but I was too busy working and providing for my family. My family needed me there to make sure we had everything we needed. It was important for me to be a good provider for the ones I loved. I was feeling fine. Didn't have any pain or other symptoms. I didn't see the need to get checked. It just wasn't a priority. So I never got checked. A year ago, when I was 58, I began having severe stomach pain and bleeding. I went to the doctor and they found colon cancer. I was shocked when they told me it was pretty advanced. I wanted to be there for my family, so I never got checked. What was I thinking? I should have gotten checked earlier. If they caught it earlier, I would still be around for my family.
So a little dramatic, but it's effective. We found that one of the reasons why men, at least they verbalize why they don't get checked, is they're too busy. They've got to take care of business at home. Just like you hear frequently that women are the primary caretakers of the family and they put it off. Well, men do too. So they voice it a little differently, but that's so we try to address that.
Cancer is very scary to me.
Fine.
I would rather not talk about it. But my sister's best friend just died of colon cancer. She'd never been checked.
So I'll stop there. We don't have a lot of time to see the whole thing. This one's about two and a half minutes. Basically, her sister's best friend got died. These are all cases that came out of our formative research, and we're not creating any fiction here. We're just voicing experiences back to the patients. And then, you know, all of a sudden there's a concern about it, and the husband and wife started talking about it, and they both got checked and so forth. So they tell their story of why, what motivated them. So we play that back. Again, behavioral modeling, you know.
My wife complained of stomach pain. I did tease and sat down with the pain hitter. She kept saying it would get better in a few days, but it didn't. It kept getting worse, to the point where it would interrupt when she was cooking or eating, or even when she was sitting down knitting while watching her favorite novella. I wanted her to go to the doctor for a checkup, but she insisted she would get better sooner. It's always an expense we couldn't afford. I loved her so much that I almost let her have her way. I'm proud that we never argued or raised our voice, even though all couples have their disagreements. In a matter of weeks, the pain grew worse, and she was bleeding in her stool. This frightened her and scared me too, when she threw me. That's when I put my foot down and I insisted she see a doctor. But it was too late. They found she had colon cancer. And it was pretty far along. They couldn't operate because it had spread to her liver and her stomach. They gave her treatments, but she didn't last long. She went fast, and it was a few months and she was gone. I now wish I had loved her enough not to let her have her way. I should have insisted she see a doctor. I should have done more, but I didn't. I don't have the love of my life with me anymore. If you love someone so much, you can't live without them. Do what you can to see that they stay alive. Persuade them to get checked, even if they don't want to. Find a way to talk to them.
This was a true story. In fact, the gentleman that was in the focus group telling us the story had to walk out, and he was, you know, in tears. But these are true stories, and it gets a point across. We use doctors, all different models, different sources of information. So here, he's giving a lot of the same information you saw in the module one, the voice animation. We do a lot of intentional redundancy, hoping that the information sticks. So a little more of that, kind of summation. Addressing the thing, you know, the concern about fate and, you know, feeling up helplessness and stuff with cancer. There are things you can do, and he reinforces that point. And then we walk through all the tests. If they want to, one of the modules walks them through all of them, or any of the, if they just want to see stool tests. There's concern that we're using advanced technology for people that are not technologically literate. They're very satisfied. They like what they're using, they understood the message, they like the navigation. They felt they learned a lot. In fact, that was the highest satisfaction score. And would they like to use this to learn about other diseases? The answer is yes. We did a randomized clinical trial. We looked at a number of things. The hypotheses, there's a handout in the back, so I can just go through these. We wanted to make sure we were reaching low-income, low-literacy populations and that there was no difference when we randomized. So randomization worked well, no difference. We didn't find significant knowledge gains. Whoops, I missed a slide. Where in the world is it? Well, it's not there. It's in the handout. So anyway, I only got like 30 seconds left. But let me conclude by saying that it was indeed effective. We found statistical significance with behavior. In fact, the effect size was terrific. We had 53, almost 54% of the treatment group get screened. So we exceeded the 2010 Healthy People Guideline of 50, we were able to demonstrate that it works well. Thank you for your attention, and thank you for helping me with the technology.